It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Coming up in 25 minutes from right now, we will be joined, because two Syracuse folks on one show is not enough, Anthony. The industry standard is three. That is, those are the rules. I don't make them.
I don't either.
So we're going to welcome in a third orange woman in this particular case. We're going to welcome in Brittany Sykes from the Washington Mystics, fresh off an absolute dismantling of the Chicago Sky last night. Now they are just one game behind Chicago for the eighth and final playoff spot. So we'll talk to Slim coming up at the bottom of the hour, a.k.a. 6:30, because I'm not supposed to say bottom of the hour anymore because allegedly no one knows what that means. Anyway, it's time for our pick six.
The six biggest Commander storylines.
It is caught!
Delivered at 6 o'clock sharp. It's the pick six at six.
We set out to find a leader, someone who could take this franchise to the next level and build an elite team that consistently competes for championships.
Anthony, let's go ahead and hit number one, please.
Number one.
So I think by this point you probably know in the day what the top storyline is, and that is that Emmanuel Forbes is going to miss some time with the UCL injury, the ligament in his thumb. That is going to require surgery. Could be 6 to 8 weeks is kind of one of the numbers that I've seen floating around. We'll obviously see if there is more information that comes out in the next 24 hours. By this time tomorrow, Dan Quinn will have spoken again, so we should know more. But Forbes is out for the foreseeable future. They will have to figure out what they want to do behind him. Noah Igbinoghene is who played last week. Michael Davis was active last week, who was their free agent acquisition in the offseason, who was expected to battle Forbes and St. Juice in training camp. And he just, frankly, wasn't that good. Igbinoghene was much better. You have guys like Chigozie Anousium. You could call it from the practice squad. There are a couple of veterans out there. We talked through some of those options at 5 o'clock with Dan Pizzuta of the 33rd team. But there's no one, like, you can't get good football players in September. Starters aren't available. It's just not a thing. Now, you might sign someone who might wind up starting, and certainly that guy or any of the guys I just named can play better than Emmanuel Forbes did last week, but that's because Emmanuel Forbes had a bad week. Emmanuel Forbes could also play better than Emmanuel Forbes played last week, and you have to imagine he would have against not Mike Evans, against not Chris Godwin, and against not Baker Mayfield. Not that Baker's amazing, but Daniel Jones is lower down the ladder. So it's a huge bummer. Obviously, it's more than a bummer for him personally, because that's ouch. That really freaking hurts. But the surgery is to come. And the Commanders are going to have to figure out not only who replaces him in the short term, probably Igbinoghene, but what the longer term prognosis is. And I mentioned this earlier in the show. I think it's a big couple of weeks for Forbes here to show the professionalism, to attack this rehab, to be attentive in meetings, to be a great teammate, and show, like, hey, I'm still bought in. I know that I didn't have a great first week. I know that I didn't perform the way I want to, but when I come back, like, I want my starting job back, and I'm going to be better because I'm going to show you how locked in I am during this rehab, and I'm going to try to be a good teammate and help in the meetings and in the film room, and I'm going to get better even though I can't go out and do it on the practice field nevertheless in game. So it's a huge couple weeks for Emmanuel Forbes, and we'll see where this team is when he gets back, because if Igbinoghene is playing great, you just stick with him. If he's not, like, how many guys have they gone through? So there's a lot of questions, a lot of time, and rather than speculate on a million what-ifs and possibilities, let's keep things moving and hear from Joe Witt Jr., number two.
Number two.
So obviously two huge things defensively, tackling, a.k.a. finishing, and the communication. Those were the bugaboos on Sunday. Let's start off with the tackling. I'm going to guess the answer to this could have been a very short no. The question to Joe Witt Jr. was the tackling up to your standard on Sunday, Joe Witt Jr.?
We missed more tackles than I was anticipating. We were a step short. And that's one thing that we're talking about, take the extra step. There was a play on the sideline. We had two of our real good players miss a tackle, and it shouldn't happen. I mean, we got to take an extra step. And when I say it shouldn't happen, that means we have to do a better job. In practice these days, you don't go to the ground. So we have to make sure we're getting our bodies in position every practice, running to the ball, getting the bodies in position to get people on the ground. So, no, it wasn't to the standard.
I love that not only is he saying it's not to the standard, because no coach is going to get up there and be like, ah, yeah, I was actually, you know, it's week one, it happens. Like, no coach is going to say that. Duh. But to have the specificity of, like, this is what we need to do, like, he knows so clearly what is wrong that it just oozes out of him. I love that. And not that everything, I try not to be so much of a theater critic that, you know, if a coach doesn't say something like that, doesn't mean he doesn't know it, like, as long as he knows it on the practice field. But I do appreciate the fact that they are identifying this and saying, like, hey, this is a technique thing. It's not a, hey, our guys need to try harder. It is simply, we did not do a good job of making sure that they understood what they needed to do. We have made it very clear to our guys this week, and I would imagine that clarity in the coaching. Like, if you got a coach that's telling you 16 different coaching points, it's hard to focus on one. Hey, man, when you're in pursuit of the ball, take that extra step. So as Frankie Louvu's, you know, processing the information, and Bobby Wagner's processing the information, and they get in the mode where they're in chase and tackle, it's going to be like, take that extra step. It's going to be fresh in their mind. That's good coaching. And so I'm excited to see if they can turn it around on Sunday. That was the biggest problem on the front end.
Number three.
Yeah. Talkie. Need more talking and effective talking. So how do you fix the communication? Joe Witt Jr. talking about that today in Ashburn.
Just like I said, the manning in the walkthroughs, making sure I stood way back, the walkthrough we just had, and I told him, I'm way back here. I got to hear it. So you have to scream. It has to be loud, all right? I don't have one player to say, I didn't get it, okay? So communication is sent, received, and acknowledged, okay? So it's not only I said it, it's not good enough. You have to make sure he's received it, he's acknowledged it, and now we're on the same page. And so that's the key part of it. It's just making sure that we're doing it and not taking anything from granted, which we didn't. Okay. But when you don't get the results that you're expecting, all right, you have to look at what you're doing to make sure.
If I was a player in that meeting, and I'd be curious, I wish I'd heard that quote before we taped the Take Command preview this morning, which now all of a sudden is going to feel a little silly because we're not going to talk about anything Emmanuel Forbes adjacent, which is a big story, but plenty of good information on there in there on the Giants. But I might just call Logan later and ask him this, or talk to Navarro and ask him this. Like, if you're a player in that meeting and you say, well, hey, Joe, what happens if I get a piece of, like, I imagine if you're Mike Stainer still, right? And the safety tells you something on a check. You go to relay it to your outside corner. Your outside corner doesn't acknowledge that he receives it. Like, now I'm caught in no man's land. How do you deal with that? Like, that's a good question from a player. And I would hope that somebody asked it. And I hope that player's Mike Stainer still, to be honest. But you have to have solutions for all of that. Of like, okay, hey, if our rules of communication are send, receive, acknowledge, what happens if we get stuck at receive? Do we default back to the original call? Because the biggest problem is not being stuck in a bad call. This is really the point of this, right? If your optimal call is to switch to cover three and you're stuck in cover two, it only becomes an insolvable problem if half of you are playing two and half of you are playing three, because now you've got a bust. Or like, hey, we're switching in man-to-man, or we're not switching man-to-man. I've got the inside guy. No, I've got the inside guy. You've got the outside guy. If you're on different pages, that's asking for a coverage bust. Then you're going to have a wide open area of the field. If you are supposed to be in cover three, but you all are playing cover two, at least you have sound cover two, and you might have a bad look, and that might be hard, and you might lose that one with the pen and give up a 15-yard completion, but at least you didn't give up a touchdown, and you just got to communicate better next time. And that's stuff you can live with as a coach versus, hey, you know, they did a good job. They had a quick motion and we didn't get it communicated fast enough, but at least we stayed on the same page versus, you know, I said this. He didn't get it. I don't know, coach. What do you want me to do? Like, I told him, like, no, send, acknowledge, or send, receive, acknowledge. So they have a plan, and I'm sure they have solutions for kind of that in-between space too, because if I'm the Giants or I'm any other team and I saw what some of the late jet motions that Tampa used did to this defense and the inability to communicate, like, I am testing them in a major way this weekend. When we get back, you'll hear from Cliff Kingsbury on the offensive side of our pick six. What did he make of the amount that Jaden Daniels took off and run? And what is his game plan going into week two against New York? More pick six next on the Hoffman Show. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And let's keep things rolling in our pick six at six, the top storylines of the day. From the Commanders, we went through some of the defensive headlines, including Emmanuel Forbes being done for a while with the wrist injury and needing surgery. Let's get to the offensive side.
Number four.
Cliff Kingsbury talking to the media today and was asked very simply what his biggest takeaway was from Jaden Daniels' performance and what he can learn from his first ever game as a pro.
Out on technical difficulty.
Oh, it sounds like we've got technical difficulties. My favorite. And we have
The competitive spirit, I think, just to watch how he continue to fight, especially at the end. You know, I called one of the worst plays I've ever called in my entire career, and he just took the ball and ran into the end zone, you know, and it was like he was not going to be denied there on the goal line, and it says a lot about him in that situation. You know, a lot of people would not have taken that opportunity to drive that ball down and then put it in the end zone, and he wanted the ball in his hands and wanted to score, so that was exciting to see. I think every day he gains more and more credibility in the locker room. With his, you know, work ethic, his attention to detail, and then the competitive spirit is as good as I've ever been around.
Anthony, did Cliff clarify what he meant about the worst play of his career? That next bite, and what he means by that? I think he was followed up on. Can we play that? Do you have that available? Sorry to spring that on you last second.
Yeah, I got it.
Because I'm curious what Cliff means by that. I think I know, but I want to hear it from his mouth.
Just playing, you know, that you have to play to even come close to simulating what a live NFL game is in season on Sundays. And I thought, like I said, his operation to not have any pre-snap penalties, to only have two penalties overall, one of them probably shouldn't have been a penalty, was really good. No play clock violations. I mean, I thought he handled himself well, and as he plays, the game will continue to slow down. But yeah, as far as the play, I called basically a speed option with no check, and they overplayed it to one side. So he just stuck his foot on the ground and got in the end zone with, you know, the highest paid safety in football chasing him, and just found a way in. So it says a lot about, I mean, we knew he likes to compete, but it definitely showed on Sunday.
I think that's really cool from Cliff to admit that, because a lot of people criticized him for that play call because Jaden wound up taking an extra hit and you're down late in that game. And, you know, while it's great to be like, oh, look, the competitor, it's like, yeah, but we need that competitor. Can he not get smashed going into the end zone? And what Cliff is saying there is, like, we should have called something. If we're going to call that play, like, if he can walk into the end zone, fine. But to not have another option for him, and so he has to wind up taking it, they force him to not pitch it, and, you know, he takes that hit. Like, good that Cliff learns from that. You know, Dan Quinn talks about the lessons, and that's a lesson of, like, Cliff has got to make sure that he manages Jaden and you don't get caught up in the game, or that you're thinking about some of this bigger picture stuff with him because he's the future of the franchise. And if Cliff is already being like, yeah, that was pretty dumb on my part, like, yeah, you don't want that to happen in the first place, but since it did, how do you handle it? I actually love that from Cliff Kingsbury, a guy who, by the way, I'm very stunned he said that out loud, because Cliff normally gives you absolutely nothing in the media. All right, speaking of Jaden running.
Number five.
How did Cliff interpret the 16 carries that Daniels took on Sunday?
Yeah, I think there's a couple calls, you know, where we thought we had premier looks that ended up hitting inside that you'd like to have back. You know, if he walks in, then it looks really good. But a lot of those, he did a great job. I'm not sure how many actually got contacted and taken to the ground on, but he does a great job finding the soft spot, finding out of bounds. But we understand, like, he has to take care of himself, and we want him to continue to grow, and you can't do that if you're banged up and on the sideline.
And, of course, part of that is on the offensive line, wrapping up the pick six here.
Number six.
What did Cliff think of the offensive line? And if the quarterback scrambling as much as he did makes him change the way that he calls plays at all?
Yeah, it's a really good front. And, like I said, a few of those were first read and get out, you know, as your first game as a rookie, and he knows he has a lot of faith in his legs, and I would too if I could run like that. So he made some plays early and got out of there, but I thought they battled against a really good front, and like no pre-snap penalties. I don't know how many holds they had. I don't think many, and so I thought that was, from an execution standpoint, played a clean game. I mean, we can all get better, coach and players, but I thought as a group they played an efficient game.
I don't disagree. Like, a couple of bad snaps in there for sure, but that happens. And I think they did a good job of limiting the exposure of that offensive line. He didn't really directly answer the question in terms of whether it changes, but it sounds like it's something he's thinking about, which is good because he's got a rookie quarterback in an offensive line that, well, not, I think, the worst in the league in the way that a lot of national people were scared it was going to be, is definitely not the best in the league either. In fact, we don't even know who is going to be on the line every series. Right now, Cliff asked, the last thing we'll play for you here in the pick six, are we going to see this continued rotation of Brandon Coleman and Cornelius Lucas, or what's going on there? Cliff?
I think everybody would like that, where it's pretty defined, but both those guys had earned the right to play in that game, and felt like we had a good rotation going, and Brandon's an ascending player and continues to get better, and Luke's been doing this a long year, and so there's some comfort there. But yeah, I think eventually you'd like to have your five that you can roll out there together and build that kind of unity.
The thing about having a five is you got to have five that can actually stay on the field the entire time. And while that's, you know, obviously offensive linemen get hurt in the NFL, just like everyone else does, and it can't be guaranteed, you want to make sure that you don't exacerbate that problem by doing something stupid, like playing a rookie who hasn't had a full training camp, a full complement of snaps, because he's not in shape to do so. And so this is, to me, something they're doing out of necessity. It's pretty clear that Coleman is just not ready to play a full complement of snaps yet, especially considering they want to play with pace. And so making sure that, you know, they get him up to speed in the proper, you know, loading is essential to prevent him from getting hurt again, which is why he's not, you know, able to play this full complement of snaps in the first place. That's our pick six. Six biggest headlines, six biggest things to know from the day out in Ashburn. We do it Wednesdays and Thursdays at 6 p.m. On Fridays, our pick six takes a little bit of a different turn. We pick the six most interesting players that we're going to keep an eye on in Sunday's game. So we'll do that tomorrow. Next here on the Hoffman Show today, Brittany Sykes, guard for your Washington Mystics. Streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980. Right now, it is our pleasure to welcome in Mystics guard Brittany Sykes. Slim, what's up? Good to talk to you.
What's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm good. And by the way, I have to pass on a quick message. I was told if I call you Brittany Sykes, then you would know who that message is from.
From AC?
Yep. That is exactly
wow.
Correct. She and, says hello.
She's the only one who can get away with that.
Yeah, we're actually I'm in Indianapolis right now with my wife. We were at the Fever game last night, the Fever Aces game. So we had lunch with AC today. She says hello. First of all, second of all, Slim, I looked up at the scoreboard in the middle of that game that I was obviously at, and went, "Oh my God, Washington is absolutely murdering the sky right now." Y'all put on one hell of a performance last night. And my question to you about it is, we see so often in the W and the NBA, the games are so long, a team gets up, and then inevitably the other team comes back. How were y'all able to stay so focused last night that early margin that you get just keeps growing and growing until the final score is as wide as it is by the end?
I mean, I think it's just, excuse me, that hunt for that level of consistency through the entire game. We've been on and off. We've had, like, we call them like pockets. We have pockets in the games where we're like going to a slump, and that'll come, you know, to bite us in our ass. So we've just been learning and growing and figuring out how do we get those pockets to become longer, to become quarters now, to becoming like 40-minute games.
Is that something that you've heard from other coaches before that you really are aware of where that comes from? Because the reason I'm asking is that is exactly how on the Wizards side of the building, Michael Winger and Will Dawkins talked about how they evaluated things. And I'm wondering if that's something that maybe, you know, Michael had talked to Mike T about, and Mike T and Eric talked about it, or however that conversation went. Or is that something that is been used in other places that you've been in your time in the league?
I mean, I think it's just like a standard, like a collective standard that any team that, you know, is hunting wins and wants to win and breed a winning culture, you want to have a level of consistency because that becomes your identity. You know, you can name other teams, you know, in this league, and you know exactly what their identity is because they've consistently done it at a high level. So, you know, we're on the hunt for that. We're trying to create a level of consistency where every night we know when we come in, this is what we do. This is what we do, no matter what the score is.
I love that framing, though, going from like minutes to quarters to halves. And obviously, y'all have been able to put some games together here. Brittany Sykes, guard for the Mystics, with us here on the Hoffman Show. The other thing that I've really enjoyed since the Olympic break, watching you obviously, one, be out there consistently, what you've had to battle through this year is insane. But you're at a point now in your career and on this team where you are a leader. And there have been a couple of nights, thankfully not too many, where you have just, you can't buy a bucket. But you are still fighting your face off on the defensive end. Your energy doesn't change. Is that something that is that always been who you've been as a player? Is that something as you've gotten older and matured in this league that you've been able to figure out ways to contribute and make sure that your energy and your leadership doesn't fall off, even if you're having a night where you're not able to hit from the field?
Yeah, no, for sure. That was something that I had to figure out throughout my entire career. I think once I got to the league and once I got to the pros, I had to figure out very quick, like, even if I'm not scoring, I have to have some effect on the game, whether it's on the defensive end, whether, you know, even on the offensive end, you know, going to the basket, but creating shots for others. So for me, it's just really the mentality of like, okay, how can I stay on the floor? If we're being completely honest, like, how can I stay on the floor? But not only how can I stay on the floor, but how can I stay on the floor and be the most effective player for my team?
No doubt. And last night, thankfully, not one of those nights. Nice 14 points, yeah. 8 rebounds, 7 assists in the win over the Sky. As the season went on, and obviously you were unfortunately watching so much of that early part from the sidelines, you and Shakira over there, and then, you know, Carly's been in and out of the lineup, but yeah, you're just floating around. Is there any talk like, hey, if we can get back on the floor and we can put it together, playoffs are still in reach? Or was it just like, I want to get back on the floor and let's see what happens? Because here you are suddenly with 4 games left to go in the season, and with last night's result, y'all are 1 game out of the final playoff spot.
I mean, I think it just, at this point, it just comes down to everybody being healthy, and we see that we have an opportunity. So we're playing 1 game at a time. Like, we're keeping everything like right in front of us, not far ahead, not thinking about what happened in the past, in the beginning of the season. Like, literally, it's like, all right, we played Chicago, we got the game, boom, we got Atlanta tomorrow. Like, what is it that we have to do to win the game tomorrow with Atlanta? Because we will play them at home that next game. That's going to be a totally different game. We got to prepare for a whole, you know, for a whole nother different game. So it's just really just staying right in front of us, and just obviously, like, the main thing is just everybody remaining healthy.
A couple of your teammates I want to ask you about real quick, and then I do want to ask you about what you expect from Atlanta and these 2 huge games that you have against them over the next couple of days. Obviously, Aaliyah had one of her better games of the season last night. Got the hard hat after, 15 points, 10 boards. What have you seen from her, and how has she been able to find a little bit more consistency here post-Olympic break and really, you know, become the player that she is, where she's now back in the starting lineup and contributing the way she is down the stretch?
I mean, I think the biggest thing is, like, her willingness to just absorb and want to learn. Like, you give her an assignment or anything, and she got it. She's locking it down. If she doesn't have it, she makes sure she works on it. every time there's an optional shoot, every time we get enough shots after practice, you always see Aaliyah working out. She's probably like the last person or second to last, I don't know, person leaving the gym. So for her to do that as a rookie is amazing, but it's just like her willingness to just want to play hard, go get the rebounds, and just want to absorb knowledge.
And then the other player I want to ask you about, I promise it's not just because she spent a little bit of time at Cuse as well, even though clearly the bias on this show is, you know, it shades a little bit orange. But Emily Engstler's really come on in the second half of the season as well. What have you seen from her, and what has she meant to this team?
Man, she has finally found that pocket, and she has taken off. I'm so happy for her. It's just really dope to see her figure it out. And really have that confidence and that swagger that she always has whenever she plays. And it's been tremendous for us, especially, you know, with Kira going down. Emily really stepped up and has helped us in a lot of key wins when we really, really needed a bucket. It was him pretty much doing it.
And then, you know, you just mentioned you have these two games against Atlanta. Atlanta, and Chicago are fighting for that final playoff spot.
Yeah.
When you scout Atlanta, they've been such, you know, in many ways like your team, been battling injuries all year long, players in and out. What do you see from the current version of the Dream that's really been playing well as of late as well, especially when they've been able to get all their players on the floor?
Yeah, I mean, they are a really good team. And like you said, with the injuries, people being in and out, the lineups look different. Like, we're playing a whole totally different Atlanta team than we played back in June. So, you know, them having JC on the floor, Ryan's doing really good, Alicia Gray's playing really well, and then Tina's in the middle. So, I mean, what we expect for them to obviously get the ball and just really, really pack the paint on defense. They're a really good defensive team, and they really have active hands. They pressure 94 feet, my gosh. So we're really going to have to prepare and just be ready for a battle. And they're home, and that home crowd is really, really good.
Yeah. What about Ryan makes her so special?
I mean, she's 6'2". She's freaking 6'2", and she really has a way of getting to her spots. She uses her body well, especially against smaller guards. And, I mean, without going to say, her jump shot, her three-pointer is a really good shot. So she's a dynamic guard. She gets to the basket. She can post up mid-post, and she can shoot the three. So, and she's a high-usage player on their team. So we're really going to have to make sure we find her in transition.
Yeah, so outside of she's got size and uses it well. She's a great shooter. She's very skilled, and you have to pay attention at all times. Other than that, it's a real easy day at the office. For you, like, would you say she's one of the toughest guards in the league? Like, you know, obviously you're known for your defensive prowess for good reason. Mm-hmm. But like, if you're thinking about, these are my hardest days at work of the season, like, does she crack that list for you, immediately come top of mind?
I will say, I put every guard, like any guard I have to guard, in the category of, like, I just look at my opponent and I just respect them. Because every guard on this team is a pro, and every guard, you know, that I guard, like, we all had to go through the same camp and everything, you know, to get to this position. So there are guards that I'm like, all right, I really have to, you know, like, make sure that I'm on my P's and Q's, but I put that on everybody. But Ryan, with her having her size at 6'2 and me being at 5'9", you know, that could be seen as a disadvantage. But her length does cause a problem for me, because I would have to probably sit up a little bit higher than what I want to on a defensive stance. So she does have to make me actually, like, change my stance a little bit. But again, like, all the guards that I guard, I respect everybody across the board, and I come to work every day to compete.
And then sometimes you get to go home with a hard hat, and that's cool.
Yeah, until your teammates smack you with it.
Yeah, does that hurt, by the way? Because that is the bit, is right? They put the helmet on so they can smack you upside the head. And I'm just like, hey, can we just do like a nice, friendlier tap? Like, how much does that hurt?
No, that's all love taps. It doesn't hurt.
Okay. All right. Well, you would see it hurt. All right. Fair enough. All right. Slim, best of luck this weekend. We'll be seeing you, obviously, in these final home games, and get to close it out at Cap One, which will be a blast. I will send my best or your best back to AC when I see you on the tail end of this trip. And thanks for joining us here on the radio.
All right, man. No problem. Thank you again.
You got it. That is Brittany Sykes with us, everybody, here on the Hoffman Show. Mystics tomorrow night against the Atlanta Dream. That's an Ion game, so the radio broadcast will not be here on the Team 980, because we have just the games that are on Monumental. But I do believe Sunday's game is here on the station, as that one against Atlanta is a monumental sports broadcast. And then, of course, you got the Liberty, and then you have the Fever at Capital One Arena to close things out. So super duper tough close to the schedule, but these next two games against Atlanta could determine whether or not the Mystics are in the playoffs. And by the way, it could seal knocking Atlanta out of the playoffs. Either way, one of those two will be a lottery pick. Of course, Chicago is going to have something to say about that as well. But that's kind of the weird underbelly of this final thing here, is this final stretch run, is the Mystics have the Dream's pick. So they're either going to have two lottery picks if Chicago can hold on, or whichever of the Mystics in Atlanta doesn't make the playoffs, the Mystics will get that lottery pick. And then the final non-lottery pick, or the highest non-lottery pick, as the eighth seed in the WNBA playoffs. When we get back, we will wrap up the show with our favorite things from the show today. And we have some real things that we've been saving up all week, so we gotta get to them next on the Team 980. It's the Offense Show. Wrapping up here on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. I'm in Indianapolis because we're here to visit my good friend Alicia Clark, as the Las Vegas Aces take on the Indiana Fever twice in 3 days. And so we're at the game. And Anthony, I have a generic sporting experience question for you real quick before we get to real things and our favorite things on the show today. But I mentioned, not just to tell the YouTube folks, like, hey, why are you in a hotel room? Or if anybody can notice a slight difference in the sound of my microphone, as I'm wearing a headset as opposed to a lovely, beautiful process radio microphone. But being a fan of an away team in an opposing arena, you have plenty of experience with this. Because you've gone to see, like, the Colts on the road when you're going to root on, especially like when it's your friend, right?
Yeah.
That's an even more unique experience than just, like, hey, I'm an away fan going because I like the team. It's one thing, like, when you go as a Commanders fan and you're going on the road and you might act a certain way. But, like, when you're like, oh, no, I'm here to see my friend play in the opposing stadium.
Mm-hmm.
How do you handle that?
With poise, I try to stay, I try to stay under the radar. Did you guys have on a jersey?
We did. I'm trying to think. I just wore like my Everyone Watches Women's Sports shirt.
Okay.
And I don't think, no, Rachel also did not have any Aces/Alicia gear on. Tomorrow's a different story.
I was about to say
two games. Tomorrow I'm wearing my Aces jersey and Rachel is wearing her Asia Wilson Team USA jersey.
And you're in Indy. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to say Indy fans are like Philly fans, but they can get a little rowdy.
They can.
They can get a little rowdy. How do you necessarily go about handling that?
I don't think anyone's going to say anything to me. And also, like, tomorrow I'm going to have my niece with me. I'm going to have a three-year-old with me. Like,
oh, yeah.
No one's going to say anything to someone with a three-year-old.
Yeah. Then you'll be all right.
And if they do, she's going to beat them up. how that's going to go.
Yeah, I think everything will be sure. I've never really had a bad experience on the road. I've never had a bad experience on the road.
I haven't either because I can keep my mouth shut. But there was a lady last night behind us who just, the simplest way to explain it is she doesn't know what a foul is. Is one of those where it's just like, how is that? Which hilariously, there was one play last night that Christy Sides challenged that was so clearly a foul. And it was actually a play that, this was a wacky bit, not to get too sidetracked, but like the referees called the foul correctly. Indiana was like looking back at their bench, like, do we challenge this? The referees like slow played the free throw to kind of give Indiana time to check it. Becky Hammon lost her mind, got teed up for like losing her mind for allowing Indiana to challenge the call because it took so long because it was an and one to let the free throw go and then review it. And it's clearly a foul because it was a foul. And it was like, and no one except for this lady behind me thought that it wasn't a foul. But, you know, I will say that. I will give Indiana fans credit. It was a very homer crowd, an entire group of people who did not think a single foul was committed by their team, and every potential sniff of contact was a foul on their team.
Yeah.
And that's just sometimes how home crowds should be. irrational people who don't actually know what they're looking at.
And I stand by every last one of those people in there.
What was your favorite thing on the show today?
I'm not going to lie. I think B. Sykes joining the show got me excited. Because, again, when you guys were talking about, you know, the intensity that she plays with, she played like that when I was at Syracuse. She's part of the reason we end up, you know, losing to UConn in the national championship. Whatever, I think that was 2016. But because of her, we were able to, you know, even make that run. Her, Alexis Peterson, the Day Twins. But yeah, I just love the drive and energy that she plays with. Because I'm cut from the same cloth as her. Like,
oh, okay, yeah. Okay. Did she say that?
Yeah. It's, she hasn't seen me play.
So you might be cut from the same cloth, but the fabric quality is a little bit different with all due respect.
A lot different.
She's in the league, bro. But no, I really enjoyed that chat. I always love talking to Slim. She's great. I think outside of that, my favorite part of the show today was hour one. The calls were great. Mark and Largo was an adventure, but a fun one. But like actually brought up some like really good talking points. And you know, Anthony, it's a great day on the show when Gary and Art Bumper Marlboro is a great call.
Yep. Good call.
So Gary was great. The first call we had, I can't remember who it was because he wasn't a frequent caller, but a really good call.
I think it was Kenny.
I think it was Kenny. I think you're right. Kenny
and Largo.
All in the Emmanuel Forbes stuff. Like, we opened the show at 4 o'clock. I talked about Forbes. If you want to go back and rewind, you certainly can. And then we took a couple of those calls, and I said to Anthony in a break, I was like, that was better than my open. So go listen to the calls in the first hour on the Hoffman Show podcast. Right now, listen to real things real people said in real microphones.
Real things.
We're not going to be f***ing this year.
Real people.
5-11. Not very good.
Said into real microphones.
You know, the culture is actually damn good.
All right, Anthony, you've been stacking up stuff back in the lab while I'm out here in Indy. What do you got?
All right. We're going to get to Kevin Durant, the story behind him being pictured holding his hands up.
The photo of him, yeah. Okay.
Coming down the slide. Here he goes.
We didn't ask about the slide.
The slide pic? Oh, they caught me at the wrong time. So on the slide, like when you got on the slide, it was like two handles when you walk up because it was like a big step.
Well, I'm grabbing
up on the handles and I jump off and I let it go. And as I'm putting my hands down, that's when they caught me. And I was just about to go like this to slide off.
I mean, it must have taken you 1 second to get out.
No, it was a nice size slide, you know what I'm saying? The picture didn't do it justice.
When you saw it go viral, were you just like, just another thing slide for KD?
I thought, who has this long-ass lens to catch us in the middle of the ocean like this? But I respect it.
That's a good question.
That is
who
a
has
funny
the long
picture
lens in the middle of the ocean? Why can't Kevin Durant go on a slide for fun on his own? Well, they have to catch him at when you take the picture on a ride's important. I remember in Disney I think it's at their MGM studio. They have the rock and roller. No, is it the rock and roller coaster? Whichever one that goes like 0 to 60 in 2. Whatever seconds. And I remember going on it with my buddy and putting the seatbelt thingy on and realizing there was like a little bit of room between me and the seatbelt. And I was like, I'm not going to fly out of this thing, but like, it's not snug. I'm like, is this okay? He's like, yeah, it's fine. So then it accelerates. Boom. 0 to 60. And I go, huh! Because I get hurled, I get bent over the seatbelt. And Anthony, guess when they take the picture on the ride that goes 0 to 60 in 2.8 seconds.
At that point, right?
Yeah. So in the picture, I'm like,
I know all about it. All right, we got one more.
I do. All right, you got to be quick.
Kobe Turner, defensive tackle for the Rams. He advocates sitting like an old man.
Are you sitting with your feet crossed?
I'm telling you, I sit like an old man.
Who granddaddy you is? Then he got his hands the same.
It ain't comfortable.
It is comfortable. I ain't gonna lie.
Ain't no way that comfortable.
No, try it. Try it. Bro, I'm telling you.
I can confirm, Anthony. I'm sitting like it right now.
Yeah.
It is comfortable. Terps Talk with Locks next.